Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hi. How are you, Scott?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was...
That's not the way you want to start this season.
Nope.
I mean, a loss is one thing. It's that. This is one of those words. It's how you lost. It's how you looked when you lost.
Well, it's been 2 years since we've seen a game like that. The Baltimore game in 2023 was the last time they were uncompetitive.
Yeah.
And that's what this was really about. It was about being uncompetitive. It was, and here's the other thing it's about. It's, you know, we talked all last week about, well, if this, if that, right? And pretty much all of the ifs, I mean, did they all go south? I mean, I could sit here and say, I like the way they defended the run. And the list gets short after that. It was a terrible, terrible performance. But it is one game, and we will discuss it all. And people are ready to vent, and I understand it. And it was bad. It was concerning in a lot of ways. And there's no sugarcoating what happened on the field. Now, you know us pretty well that there's going to be a zoom out and look at the big picture. And if you don't like it, that's fine. I like to say, and I mean this sincerely, everybody's feelings are valid. If you are in full panic mode or you were really concerned about A, B, C, and D, and you think this is going to, that performance was reflective of who they're going to be this year, I can understand why you're more concerned with the long-term ramifications and that this is, you know, that's a team that's doomed. and you know, there's no question that was concerning. Like, you can't watch a game where they're that uncompetitive and that the fears that you see, like the coordinators, yeah, not a great performance. The O-line, yeah, not a great performance. The pass rush, yeah, not a great performance. Remember a couple of weeks ago, he said, my God, if they lose this Green Bay game, it is going to be an all-out panic on the Monday afterwards. And they lost, and they lost with authority.
Yeah, they earned the loss. They absolutely earned the loss, and it was frustrating at every level of the game, whether it was the offense inability to get the ball downfield, or worse yet, when they did, they couldn't finish. You know, you get in the red zone three times, you end up with two field goals and an interception, and then eventually you get the touchdown at the end, and maybe the most amazing, and this isn't even hyperbole, that might be the most amazing catch I've ever seen in my life.
It was an incredible catch. I wish it mattered.
I wish it mattered, too, because, and I haven't looked at ESPN, but it should be number one on ESPN, even though they probably give it this to a finishing drive by the Bills, but it was unbelievable. It was absolutely unbelievable, and it really doesn't matter, because the offense sputtered. Jared Goff was under duress all game long. You had a running game that was, I'm not going to say it was non-existent, because they did, there were times where they were moving the ball, but they couldn't get it going like they normally would get it going. You didn't see those big 15-yard gains and the breaking tackles getting to the second level and you making a guy miss and all that. I think there were 22 runs. Is that what they had last night? There were 22 runs last night, and I think 16 of them, the first hit came in the backfield.
Yeah.
That's an incredible rate of futility when it comes to stopping penetration. So the offense, obviously they sputtered. Everything was dink and dunk. They couldn't really move the ball downfield, throw the ball downfield. Defensively, no pass rush whatsoever. They stopped the run. They looked really good against the run, I thought, for the save for a couple of carries. And I don't care about the couple of carries. I mean, they held Josh Jacobs pretty much in check with the exception of a 15-yard run. They did great against the run, but the secondary, penalties on the secondary, breakdowns, there were missed assignments and leaving guys wide open, that happened. But that lack of a pass rush, I mean, that we didn't – Aiden Hutchinson was nowhere to be found. He's not on the score sheet. And trying to hope, oh, we'll see what's opposite of Hutch. I want to see Hutch, you know, and that's a tough thing to watch when we've seen him all training camp long. With our eyes, we saw him in a handful of practices, and he looked just like a disruption waiting to happen. He was amazing.
Well,
and by all accounts, that's what he was. And then last night, nothing. And it's not all on him. It's just this is what the frustration's coming out. And the special teams were also disturbing with the mistakes that they made there. Lining up offside on a punt, when you're the punting team, negating a really good punt that got inside the 20, and then you have to re-kick it, and there's a 32-yard difference. It's those things. When you have mistakes in special teams, they get magnified when everything else is going wrong, and then scoring plays happen as a result of it. It was just an epic collapse in all three phases of the game yesterday. No, they didn't miss a field goal attempt, and no, they didn't get anything blocked and or returned against them for a touchdown, but it were the little things that did matter in the special teams as much as they mattered in offense and defense.
It's concerning performance. There's no doubt about it. 248-539-9797. We got open lines, and certainly plenty of people want to talk, and we'll start knocking them down. In the meantime, Champ and Chump, we do it every Monday. Who should be singled out for Champ and Chump of the weekend? Who had the best weekend? Who should be called out for having a weekend that stinks?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so it's Carson Anderson, 97-1 the ticket. Champ and Chump, let's get him in. Look, it was a bad game. It is one game. And they look, the last time they looked this bad was the Baltimore game back in 2023. It's almost two calendar years ago that they played an uncompetitive game. And that team played for the NFC Championship.
This is true.
And so this doesn't doom them for an entire season. It's certainly concerning. There are worries. Does it mean they are doomed? Do we need to condemn everyone today? I'm not in that camp. I'm concerned. I'm worried. But I'm not going to condemn everyone today because I think they've earned the right to kind of pull their way out of this. You know, last year, do you remember last year how the offense looked at the beginning of the year? It didn't look great. It struggled a little bit the first couple of weeks. And there was some thought at the time that maybe not playing in the preseason was because they sat out even more people this year for longer, you know, and they played four preseason games. And that, you know, if this is a repetitive pattern, because the offense was brutal, it could be indicative of the losses in the middle of the offensive line and the coordinator could be concerning. But quite frankly, the offense didn't start last year great with the coordinator that they had, and then they got it going. So, you know, I'm open to the idea that that could happen. Don't love what we saw yesterday. Let's be clear about that. But I don't know. I'm there's still 16 games left to be played.
Yeah, in the end, I think I look at the offense and it looked like there were a bunch of missed assignments. And then afterwards, you hear there were a bunch of missed assignments. Mm-hmm. And I think Jared Goff even said after the game that, you know, you got to do a better job of lining guys up, and he'll take leadership with that this week. And I hope that's the quick fix. I hope that that's what it is. And of course, you're still going to have a learning curve with Ratledge and even with Mahogany on the left guard side as well, and a little bit with Glasgow at center, though he's already played there and he's been in the league for, you know, 10 years or whatever it is. I'm less worried about Glasgow than I am with getting the other two guys up to speed. But, you know, I think they heap praise on Ratledge for a reason. I think they really like him. But it's still a rookie out there, and he's going to make rookie mistakes. And there were plays that you saw last night where they're at the goal line, and, you know, he goes over to protect, help protect on the right side, and leaving a guy wide open to come and plug up the that A gap and come shoot right in and almost get the safety. I guess Rashawn Gary almost got the safety on that play. It's when you see plays like that, it's frustrating. It's maddening for fans and, of course, for the players, because they know right away if they made a mistake. They know right away. And I'm guessing that feeling came around way too often for those guys, that group on the offensive line, or even if it's receivers lined up wrong or running backs, whatever the case is. They could not get their offense going well enough to protect Jared Goff, where he had 3 seconds in the pocket, step up and throw the ball where he wanted to. I don't know if it was a single pass that he made last night that felt like that for him. It was under duress the whole time, and it felt like the entire time that pocket collapsed, right? Or if it didn't collapse, it came closing in on him from the middle. Not necessarily from the tackles, but from the middle. And, yeah, the tackles weren't great either. But it was just a bad game all around. And I hope that this is just a yuck throw it in the garbage game, and not that they were outmatched in every single way imaginable.
248-539-9797. Paul's in Madison Heights and on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning, guys. Long time no talk. Am I in bizarro world? Did we win the Super Bowl last year and I'm not aware of this? Like, that's how they came out. Like, they should have been on lawn chairs on the sidelines smoking cigars. Like, you know, getting a new offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, don't you think it would probably been a good idea to, like, see what you got with the starters, especially with 4 games? So now we have 5 preseason games, and now you're going into next week with a guy just salivating to make you look even worse. This could get really bad, guys. I don't know.
Paul, let me ask you, do you think he's salivating to make them look even worse than what they did, or you think he's just hopeful to get his team off to a good start? Whatever Ben Johnson's going to do, it's about him and the Bears, not about anything with the Lions.
I get it, but I'm just saying there's no love lost there. I mean, this guy's going to come out, like, I expect, and this is really going to concern me, if the Bears come out tonight and just bring all the smoke.
Well, let me ask you a question, because if you think, again, Paul, I got to ask you a question here. You think that Ben Johnson's going to want to send a message and that's going to make a difference. Do you think Dan Campbell's going to want to send a message?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that this guy should have came out firing on all cylinders, not looking like a four banger against a B-12. I mean, they looked like a semi-pro team, and nobody knew what they were doing. It was mass confusion. I mean, you don't start off that way coming off of 15-3 season. I mean, you haven't done anything yet, truthfully, because the only thing that matters is the Super Bowl in this city anyway. And this is just like, okay, are we going through this again? You need 10 yards, go for 5. You know, confusion on the line, penalties to set you back. Holding call to get rid of a touchdown that could have got you back in it. I'm not doing it again. I'm not going backwards again.
All right, thank you, Paul. 248-539-9797. We all rest assured Paul's not going backwards.
We thought you had in the wagon, Paul. Sorry.
Look, you know, nothing that he said there is particularly inaccurate. It was a brutal performance.
Terrible.
But there's lots of season to be played. And I'll give you an example, okay? I have concerns about the interior of the offensive line. It was my number one concern going into this season. Those concerns were not alleviated yesterday.
No.
But you know who they still have? They still have Hank Fraley. And Hank Fraley is widely considered one of the best O-line coaches in the NFL. He has seen what there was to see. There was clearly confusion. No better example than that play at the goal line where it's like, hello, come on through. And I like our O-line coach. and I still like the talent there, the young talent in particular. So let's see what Hank Fraley does with that group. There are other things that I'm not sure are in great hands. I think the offensive line is in great hands.
Yeah, I agree with you with the coaching aspect of it, and I'm hoping that, you know, the issues of the offensive line are not about talent. They're not about technique. It's about the mental side of the game and knowing what the playbook is and knowing what the defense is across from you and knowing what your assignment is supposed to be. I really hope that's the thing. Because if it's the other things, then it's going to be a longer transition than we had expected. But I do think that the guys are talented, so I don't think that's it. Is it technique? This is where Hank Fraley is really going to shine. It's with his technique and teaching the guys how to do it. But the guys have to bury their heads in the playbooks and understand what the plays are supposed to be and what the defense. Yeah, and film as well. And here's the defense that's across from us. Understand what our assignment's supposed to be. And you know it does take time. And nobody wants to hear that. But that was what was so great about this line for the last few years, is it was relatively unchanged. You know, the line was what you had. And then had some changes last year, but they were able to bring a veteran guard in as one of those changes. And the other veteran guard you had slid to the other side. So they had all this experience on the offensive line. This year, you've got two guys that are effective rookies starting in the interior.
Shane is next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Shane.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just wanted to remind all the Lions faithful that we have started 1-1 the last three seasons. I mean, it was a horrible performance, probably one of the worst I've seen in the Dan Campbell era, but we got to get, you know, we got to get these guys together, and I think we're going to be all right. And, you know, we were 1-1 the last 3 years, so I think everything's going to be all right, so don't freak out yet, but everybody seems to be freaking out.
Well, look, we'll give you your time here, Shane. I'll just say this. If you thought Dan Campbell was a good head coach, okay, and if you thought Brad Holmes was a good GM, one game at the beginning of a season doesn't completely flip that upside down. It doesn't completely invert. Now Dan Campbell sucks and Brad Holmes sucks. But
exactly,
it's going to be interesting to see how they respond, because that was a check minus. And it's a check minus on Campbell. It's a check minus on the coordinators. It's a check minus on the new O-line. It's a check minus on perhaps the pass rush and not adding more. But it is one game, and I'm more than willing to, you know, you don't plan parade routes after one game, so you don't give up on the season. The previous caller's given up on the season, but you know, exactly, I think that's ridiculous. I'm not.
Me neither. Yeah, that's why I just want to call and, you know, say it's not over yet. I mean, it's only one game, you know.
Appreciate the phone call, Shane. 248-539-9797. We'll have our Champ and Chump nominations today at 10:35. It is Carson Anderson.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There you go. Jared Goff. We'll speak to him tomorrow, get his take upon further review after he watches this thing and processes this thing. 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. Let's go to Al in Shelby Township here on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Al.
Hello there. How are you?
Okay.
Yeah, it's one game. Hey, just a couple things, guys. You know, for me, in order for a coach to be close to his players, you need to be with your players. What is Morton doing up in the booth? He should be down on the sideline with his players, talking to them, get to know them, understand them. If he was here before and he knew what made the offense go, he surely didn't bring it yesterday with that play call, and I'll tell you that. But my thing is, he's got to get down on the sideline with the players. Not up in the booth.
How many offensive coordinators do you think are up in the sideline versus how many are up in the booth.
Well, I don't know that, and I understand what you're saying. I know it's a team choice, but for me, listen, this applies to anything in life. If you want to be good at what you do, you have to be engaged with your people.
But you're assuming that. Assuming that he's not because he's up in the booth.
Well,
where a lot of offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators watch the game from.
No, and I understand that, guys. Believe me. Yeah. But Ben Johnson was down with his players.
Well, that was Ben Johnson.
Line.
That's Ben Johnson. This is a different guy altogether.
But even with that said, he knew the players we have.
Well, I guess
his play calling didn't reflect it.
I hope you're right that the fix is that easy. That it's just putting him down on the field. I hope it's that simple. Do you think it's that simple? I don't think it's that simple, man.
Do you think it was play calling that hurt them?
So here's the thing about play calling.
I wanted to get to this with the we can talk about the coordinators and how they're new and how it looks different. Just spending time on the offensive side, all right, with Johnny Morton, the offensive coordinator. Do you think that the offensive woes from the Lions in last night's game against the Packers stem directly from the play calling?
Well,
do you think that was it?
The short answer to your question is no. I think play calling looks bad when you can't win the battles up front. I mean, when you can't run block and you're not pass protecting great, you're not going. It's not about the play calls, and there are limitations in what you can do when you have a struggling group up front, and it's not to me, that's not play calling. To be fair, I think every OC makes terrible calls during the game. Everyone, the best ones do. There are play calls that are doomed, wrong call against the wrong defense. And the other thing about play calling is a lot of time you go to line of scrimmage and have check with me's where the play changes at the line of scrimmage and it's predicated on the defense, or that wasn't the play that was called. Kill, 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 right? I mean, so there are all kinds of nuances to play calling that I don't know get thought about by everybody at all times, but when it comes right down to it, there's so many great game plans that get doomed by losing the battle up front, and that's what it looked like to me.
I think 100% is exactly what the problems were with the offense last night. It was that everything got wrecked up front. It wasn't about, they're running a pass play here or they're running a running play here or he's having a check down. If he's having a check down, it's because things broke down. When you're dinking and dunking your way down the field and you completed 31 out of 39 passes, but it's only 225 yards, you're having to unload the ball quickly. He didn't have time to sit back in a pocket, step up, throw it. He didn't have 3 seconds. He had like a second and a half at best, and he had 1 second before everything came in on him. That's why I asked the guys in the crosstalk, asking, TJ Lang and John Jansen, two guys that played in the NFL for a long time on the offensive line, about that. Because with my eyes watching it, it seemed like, is Goff even taking enough steps back? Because every time he's getting ready to throw, it's like the front of the offensive line is coming in on him. And yeah, a lot of it's missed assignments, and it's going to take time for these guys to figure that out. I was hoping it would be quicker, that we wouldn't see that as much last night, but it was the entire game. That's how it looked to me, was just constant pressure coming from the front.
All right, Champ and Chump, we have our nominations. Gator, my champ of the weekend is Tarek Skubal. 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs. He is the guy that can be counted on a team that's still trying to find its footing. Only a half game out of the best record in the American League, and yet going through their struggles, Skubal is so reliable and so good, and he'll be my champ of the weekend.
Yeah, Skubal was great, and he's so dependable. Was it a 12th start he's made this year where it's been 6 innings or more of shutout baseball? It's a Tigers record. When you think back to all the great pitchers the Tigers have had, he's the first one to go 12 games of 6 shutout innings or more. That's impressive in a start. For me, it's Aiden Childs, Michigan State quarterback. Really nice game for him. 231 yards in the air, 4 touchdown passes. He also had a touchdown run. The pass he made for the 2-point conversion to win the game, it looked easy. And then you go back and watch it, like, that's not an easy pass to make. you know, all the way across the field, basically. And he's got two guys to throw to, has to overthrow the one guy, get to the deeper guy. Heck of a job for Michigan State and Aiden Childs leading to the win over Boston College.
My chill by the weekend is the Lions, not for losing, but playing the most uncompetitive game in 2 years.
Yeah, I throw it at the defense, Lions defense. That's where I was really disappointed in. We built up the secondary to be one of the better secondaries in football, and they just looked challenged. They were making penalties. They looked lost at times. Terry Arnold ended up, you know, leaving the game for a little bit. Aiden Hutchinson was kind of non-existent in the game. They had no pass rush whatsoever. Not a good day for the Detroit Lions defense.
248-539-9797. Get your champ and chump votes in. We will get to a bunch of those. Let's go to Greg in Detroit. You're next on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys. Love you guys always. I'm bloody sending to Blue Monday, and I don't mean Honolulu Blue. You know, a couple. Dennis Green had a rant. And one of his rants was, they were who we thought they were. They were, you know, and in this case, they were who we forgot they were. Because if you remember a couple of Thanksgivings ago, Green Bay came in here and raided the Thanksgiving Day party and took all the food and took the turkey and ate with their hands and took the cakes and pies with them. And we had to clean the kitchen. And then the following year, we beat Green Bay with an ailing Jordan Love, and then the next game we lost to their backup. So I kind of think that we forgot who Green Bay were, and then understanding that they had the number 5 defense in the league, and now they have Parsons. So I think we kind of forgot who they were, you know. So, but it's only the first game. I love my Lions. I know Coach Campbell's going to get this together. I know they can go back to the drawing board. But now that my feet are on the ground, because I was just out of myself, it's going to be a challenging season, but I think everybody's going to find their niche, find their groove, and everything's going to fit in place.
Greg, thank you for the phone call. We go to Jesse next on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Jesse.
Hello.
Hey.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
So I was talking, I don't think I need to speak about the Lions because enough people will, but I was going to give a champ and chump.
Yep.
Champ, Emeka Buka for really proving as a rookie first round pick that he's ready for the game, scoring 2 touchdowns. And then chump, John Harbaugh for always letting off of the gas. He constantly loses 4th-quarter games.
All right, got you down. I'll say this about Emeka Buka. He was one of my there were a few kids from Ohio State that I really got to like covering him through the years. I thought were cool kids. Emeka Buka was one of them. Trevion Henderson was the other. Big fan. And Buka is incredibly talented. 248-539-9797. Cortez is next on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Cortez.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
Good. I was just calling to say that all spring long we were hearing about how great the Lions defense was. Did anyone ever consider maybe that defense looked good because it was playing against a poorish offensive line?
Well, I'm sure people are thinking that now. Yeah, and I mean they look fantastic against the Dolphins, but the Dolphins looked like mung yesterday. They looked adequate against Houston, and Houston didn't look all that strong yesterday either. So, I mean, maybe that's there's a lot of that going on right now, Cortez.
That was my only bit. I just think that we were fooled because we kept hearing about how great this defense was playing, but it was in scrimmage.
Well, they were pretty good last year. There was a really good defense last year, and not much has changed on that defensive side of the ball in terms of personnel.
I can't speak for what he heard. We talked about how the defense could be pretty damn good. It could be pretty damn good. We'll see over the course of time.
I didn't expect them to be that flat yesterday.
No, I didn't either. That was definitely disappointing. And one part of the defense in particular really bothered me. But we will get to all of that as we unpack. It's a glum. It's glum. Jared Goff afterwards, 248-539-9797. All right, so a couple things here. One is, this is not a good performance, and I don't think anybody is going to sugarcoat that. There's no reason to. It was what it was. It was brutal. So is the season over? Is this a sign that this team is poised to have a are they doomed at this point? And you know, the reason I don't think they're doomed at this point goes back to what we've seen over the last few years. There is reason to be more concerned than normal, but let's keep in mind their three worst offensive outputs last year were games 1, 2, and 3. That's when they had Frank Ragnow, they had Ben Johnson. They scored 20 in the opener in 60 minutes. In overtime, they got a touchdown against the Rams. And then where they lose the second game, 20-16 to Tampa. And I got to look up the third. So they scored 20, they scored 16. And then in game three, hold on, and that was Gator, you know how when you go to click on something and it moves at the last
second? Oh, does it move?
Game three was at Arizona. They scored 20, okay? So they scored 20, 16, and 20 in their first three games last year.
And then became the most prolific offense in the football league last year.
And never scored that. Those were their three worst offensive outputs of the year. So is it fair to be more concerned this year because of the interior of the offensive line and the coordinator being gone? Yeah. Yeah, it is. 2 years ago, they played a less competitive game at Baltimore. That game was worse than this. And that game came in the middle of the season. That team that played that game played for the NFC title. So that's why I'm not giving up on the season. We've already had that call today. But, you know, there's a lot of football to be played. And people that we still know and trust, I think, are very competent. That includes Dan Campbell. That includes Hank Fraley. But it is more concerning this year because of the changes that have been well documented. 248-539-9797. Kang, we haven't gotten your thought yet.
I mean, you guys said it. It was ugly, both sides of the ball. It was a terrible loss. Short term, you got to look at it 0-1, right? Mm-hmm. Season's not over. You got to move on to next week. But the long-term concerns are what people are panicked about. All your fears and concerns kind of came true yesterday, and that's the scary part. Like I said, the question is it long-term? Dan Campbell said after the game, all these mistakes are correctable. But do you have the right guys to correct the mistakes is what the concern is. Of course, mistakes are correctable, but can you correct them? Does Glasgow, Ratledge, Mahogany, do they have what it takes to correct those mistakes? Because everyone's biggest concern going into the year was the offensive line and the new coordinators. Well, after one game, they put up their fewest average yards per play since 2021 and their second fewest in the Dan Campbell era, according to Will Birchfield, our writer.
Yeah, go back to Anthony Lynn.
I mean, that's bad.
Yeah.
And now the difference is you brought last year those games that they played bad, Doug. Mm-hmm. Those guys had resumes, though. John Morton and the interior of this offensive line, they don't have the resume that those guys did.
As I said, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why people are freaked out. And if you want to bring up, is it the play calling? You can't call any plays if you don't block anybody, right? Nope. But he's also responsible for that offensive line and why they missed those assignments, why they weren't blocking anybody. That's on John Morton as well. And then the thing with Ben Johnson is, when the offense isn't clicking like it wasn't yesterday, he was able, you could kind of like, he could scheme up something crazy to get something going, right? Can John Morton do that? After week one, we didn't see it.
I'm not sure if missed assignments around the offensive coordinator. If they don't know what they're doing, then ultimately falls under that umbrella. But if they don't know what they're doing, I think that falls on Hank Fraley more so. But I don't think that's the case. I think they were just missed assignments. I think guys made mistakes, and it cost them. Clearly, it cost them. But I don't think it was an offensive coordinator issue. I think it was an interior offensive line issue. And to your point, Kang, and to Doug's point, and I think all our points going into the season, probably the number one concern was how are these three guys going to work together when you've got one rookie and one guard, the other guard hardly played last year, and then you've got, you know, Graham Glasgow at center, which is clearly, you know, a step back from what Frank Ragnow was. And it looked awful. The offense could not get going yesterday. And offensively, that's a big problem. When you averaged 33 points a game last year, you were expecting this well-oiled machine to get going. But I'm glad, Doug, you brought up what happened in the first three games last year when this was a team that was coming back from, you know, getting the NFC Championship game, really good offense, and they sputtered for 3 weeks.
And I don't know if that is because they don't play their guys in the preseason. At the time, we sort of talked about that a little bit a year ago, and then they got going, and we think, well, maybe that does make sense that they were slow out of the gate because of lack of preseason reps against real competition. But look, whether it is or it isn't, we'll find out over time. The issues, though, now are, do they have the people to correct it? Because last year they corrected it, And by the people, I mean the people that are in the spotlight right now, and that's the OC and the interior of the O-line.
Well, and how do you do in making adjustments, right? So you go to halftime, and they're down 17-3 at the half, and they don't look good. How do you come out in the second half? Well, in the second half, I thought the Lions defense actually played pretty well. When you look at what the Packers did, here are the Packers' drives in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
3 plays, 8 yards, punt. 8 plays, 39 yards, punt. 8 plays, 36 yards, touchdown. It was a 36-yard drive that happened because of a special teams mistake on a punt where the guy was lined up offsides on a punt. They have to re-kick it, and there's a big difference. Actually, it may not be that play, but there was a return.
That the turnover?
It was a return. That was where they had to kick from their own goal line, and it had a big return. So 36-yard touchdown drive, that's so far what they've got going in the second half. The next drive, 4 plays, 7 yards, but they got a field goal, and then the end of the game. So the second half, the defense did awfully well in keeping Green Bay away.
248-539-9797. Let's go to Reno in Royal Oak. You're next. Hello, Reno.
Hey, fellas. Thanks for this. Sure. Not to pile on, but, you know, I think it warrants it. Obviously, like what everybody's saying, the Lions, you know, let's face it, when the two best things of the yesterday's game was when Tesla made that catch, unfortunately, it didn't matter. And when Love took the knee to end the game, you know there's issues. So, like, nothing was right. They didn't seem to be prepared or whatever.
Well, I mean, I'll give the Lions run defense, too, some credit.
Okay, yeah, for sure. Champ, if you don't mind me going off menu just a little bit, a buddy of mine, his name's Steve Anier. He's the CEO and director of Gibby's Parkinson's Foundation. Mm-hmm. I was going to call in last week, but you guys didn't do the Champ and Chump thing. He just finished climbing Mount Kilimanjaro last week to raise money for the foundation. He's done the Free Press Marathon 3 years ago. He's done it on one leg, which is the caveat of all this. No prosthetic. It was 19,000 feet. Did it in 9 days. He made it up and back. So I
How do you do that with no prosthetic?
Crutches?
Yeah,
or?
To know the guy. I mean, he's got two walking sticks, and we always bust his chops that he's cheating because he's got 3 points of contact. But let's face it. Check out Gibby's site, and you can see. But he's got two sticks, and just I can't say enough about the guy.
I think he's been here.
So
I think
appreciate
we met,
you guys.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome.
So, thanks, fellas.
Appreciate it, Reno. 248-539-9797. Champ and Chump brought to you by Sarah Chevrolet, Sterling Heights. We go to John next on 97 on a ticket. Hi, John.
Hey, good afternoon or morning or whatever time it is. Champ and Chump, I actually have two chumps. One's a minor. The first chump is the Lions defense. All the penalties and just not playing is just frustrating. The second chump, I don't know if you listened to Caputo on the weekend, but there was a guy who called in and kept calling him Gator over and over. And so eventually he just hung up on him. But like, you should know what host you're calling, right?
Fair enough.
Champ is going to be Josh Allen because I think at one point they were down like 20 points.
They were down 16 at the end, yeah.
16, yeah. That was the best game of week one.
That was a pretty impressive
game. We haven't even seen the Bears play, but I think it's still going to be the best game. It was a great game.
Thank you for the phone call, John. 248-539-9797. Paul's in Northville and next on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing this morning, gentlemen?
What's up,
Paul?
Hey, appreciate you including me and taking the call. Got to open up with a resounding go green to begin. What a heck of an overtime win, eh, boys?
That was nice. It was nice seeing him battle back a little bit and show some mettle there. And Aiden Childs looks he's definitely saw some growth. He's still got some raw moments, but he looked pretty good on Saturday night.
Yeah, good to see him come back in after, you know, maybe being injured and lead the team to victory. So that was a big one. You know, I was going to make a point. You guys mentioned it a couple of minutes ago. Success leaves clues in the NFL, and there's a guy that's taken a couple of teams deep, won a bunch of championships, guy by the name of Andy Reid. And what Andy does that a lot of other guys don't do, and we should have done, it's too late now, he'll put the starters in for a really brief moment of time in the preseason. and get him some reps. And with as Swiss cheese as our interior line was yesterday, that maybe should have happened. And I get it that, you know what, you don't want to get the guys hurt and all that.
Well, Ratledge did play in the preseason. I don't know if Mahogany did, but Ratledge definitely played a couple games in the preseason.
Okay. I didn't watch many of the games. But can I give you a chump before I let you go?
Sure.
My chump is Chris Illich. And I, as a hockey guy through and through, I find it disappointing that he put Hockey Town on the ice at center ice this year. Because, and we'll talk about probably later on in the year when hockey revs up, but we're far removed from the Hockey Town.
Yeah, but it's 100 years of hockey here, so I think that might be the trump card of why they went back with it for this year. I also said the same thing it was a month ago now or so when we found out that was going to happen. Didn't love it, but at the same time, I understand. It's 100 years of hockey. You want to embrace the heritage, go ahead and do it this year.
Hey, and look, the guy's welcome to his opinion, certainly, yeah. Champ and Chump. I will park putting Hockey Town on the ice squarely in the irrelevant category. It makes no difference to me whatsoever. It has nothing to do with the product on and off the ice. The product's the product. It needs to be better. 248-539-9797. More your phone calls and feedback coming up. More your Champ and Chump votes. 97.1 The Ticket.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.